Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I'm Mari Forth.
And I'm Sarah Carradine, podcasting from unceded Gadigal land.
And this is Crime Scene, a true crime review podcast where we get to the heart of how true crime stories are told. So let's open up today's file. We watched The Dropout.
Well, he sure did. And we also have someone with us who also watched The Dropout. We're most chuffed to have this podcaster, variety streamer, and outspoken bon viveur, and my companion on the dark walk, Kirsten McInnes. Hi, Kirsten.
Hello. I'm so happy to be here. It's about time, 6 episodes in, to have me on Crime Scene, but I'm so excited to be here.
Yes.
As if we haven't been planning this for literally months.
Now, careful. So what draws you to true crime, Kirsten?
Well, I think, like most other people, first of all, my mother was a huge true crime person. And so there was a lot of, murder shows and documentaries on in my house growing up. One of the first ones I remember is it was a movie on A&E. I think it was just called The Green River Killer. And it was about how they had used interviews with Ted Bundy to solve to create the profile for the Green River Killer case that ultimately ended up being accurate. But also, and Mari's talked about this before, I'm a deeply anxious person. And I think anxious people are drawn to true crime because you think if you know about the crimes, if you know about what tactics people use, you can protect yourself and you can defend yourself. So I'm always looking for ways to not die. And so that goes to true crime.
Exactly that. And we are so happy to have you here, Kirsten, because we love getting together with people who love true crime as much as we do. But we also like to just talk about some scam stuff. It feels like scams are in. What do you feel? How do you feel about that, Kirsten? Do you feel like there's an uptick of less murdery true crime?
Yeah, so I think if you want to look for a murder show, a murder podcast, murder content, it's out there and it will always be out there because us true crime freaks like myself, we will consume all of that content and we will consume the same cases over and over just looking for a new piece. But it is amazing to, read, watch, consume content that's not about someone being dead at the end of it, right? And so I feel like it kind of scratches that itch without putting you into a truly morbid situation. I think this fraud in particular is a little bit more iffy because of the medical component to it. Makes it a little bit, I think, more scary than when people just lose money. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Very sinister. But the thing with fraudsters is they will keep doing frauds. There will always be people running scams and there will always be people doing frauds because they get away with a small scam. Mm-hmm. And then they think, okay, well, I could do a little more. I could do a little more until at some point it just turns into how Theranos was in this example, right? And so I'm loving it. I'm loving the scam trend. I know Scam Goddess is a great podcast that just
love
goes on
that
into
podcast.
Scams.
Yeah. Ooh,
and that content is it's here and it's amazing, and I'm so grateful for it.
Yeah.
Well, Elizabeth Holmes isn't going to be allowed to run a business for 10 years. That's I'm jumping ahead. That surprised me. I would have thought never, but then we must come with forgiveness. So in another 10 years, let's see what she has come up with.
Well, it also depends how long she's in prison, right? Because
Very much so.
She hasn't been sentenced yet. So yeah, we are talking about The Dropout. So this is one of those things we've been amping it up for a few weeks. This is one of the things I really wanted to talk about. There's been plenty of like podcasts about it. There's been plenty of documentaries about it. And of course, like we said here at Crime Scene, we're examining the property itself. Like, how did they present the characters? How did they present Elizabeth Holmes herself as a character, Sunny? How did they present the crime and stuff like that? But I also, like, up front am going to say I am a medical laboratory scientist. So the thing that got me about not just The Dropout, but I followed this case when it first started. Like, when she first started getting that limelight in 2015, when I first heard about what she was claiming she could do, I was like, there's no way she can do this. Like, she shouldn't have gotten this far ahead. All any of those people had to do was talk to one medical laboratory scientist, and they would have told you from jump that what she's claiming her technology can do is impossible. And we kind of see that in some of those earlier episodes that we'll get into. But this is one of those topics I really want to talk about, because I literally have firsthand like experience with tests that are point of care testing, laboratory regulations, stuff like that. So I'm very excited to jump in and kind of bring some sort of expertise to it. But again, as always, on podcasting, you know, take everything with a grain of salt and do your own research, right?
Oh, I'm triggered. Do your own research.
Yeah, but also, like, if a scientist who is an expert in the matter is giving you the information, trust that a little bit more if you're not a scientist.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
Just because you know, there's balanced reporting where we have one person for and one person against on these talking head shows. It really should be 100 for and one against, or the other way around. So also look at that. Like, where is the preponderance of the opinion of the experts? I'm not a science expert, my father was a scientist, a marine biologist. Uh-huh. So, you know, if you want to know anything about crustaceans, let me know. But
way to cook them so I can eat them.
The one thing I will say is don't cook them alive, but there you go. it was fascinating to me. And I wanted to take a step back before we start going into full spoilers of The Dropout. Uh-huh. I just wanted to take a step back to, let's talk about capitalism, which we absolutely love to do.
I'm ready.
Just
one step.
You're ready?
Okay.
One step.
Yeah, well, I'm ready for this.
All the tests that she, you know, claims is from a drop of blood. Part of the appeal is that it's a drop of blood and not a vial of blood. Okay. Right. I mean, I haven't been stuck 100 times, but I have, you know, given blood for both testing and as a donation. It doesn't bother me. I know it bothers some people. But let's just take a step back to the price. So I can go to any medical testing place, not any. I can get my blood tested for nothing is what I'm trying to say. That's the punchline.
Oh, right.
I live in Australia. We have socialized medicine. Yes, I could be with an expensive private doctor and they could send the tests to expensive private pathology labs and it could cost me lots of money. But we have a system called Medicare, which means I can see a doctor for free. I can go to the hospital for free. I can go in an ambulance for free. And one of the things I can do for free, X-rays and blood testing.
Wait, stop bragging. Oh my God.
That's what I'm saying. I'm looking over here like
I know, sorry. We have a lot of political problems, which it's not the place of this podcast to go into now. But what struck me more watching The Dropout than it had consuming previous properties like the which we'll mention at the end, documentaries and podcasts, was the appeal of the inexpensive blood test. Now, if blood tests were free, that appeal would be gone. And I know you have socialized medicine there in Canada, Kirsten. Can you talk to costs there?
Yeah, so we do have, you know, socialized Medicare here, but it's not to the same extent as Australia from what you've said. I can go to the doctor and they can requisition a blood test, and the doctor appointment's free, the blood test is free, all of that is fine. And now, if you go to Life Labs, you can even like get your number so you can look at your own results after, which I think is just so cool. Not that I can read my results because I'm not a scientist, but it's still cool to see. And like, it's interesting because like some stuff is like, there's like a normal range, but maybe you're like at the bottom of that range, that kind of thing. However, it's not to the same extent as you, because if I needed to take an ambulance, I would have to pay for that ambulance. And like, does my insurance through my work cover that? Maybe. I don't know. I'm very grateful that I haven't had to be in an ambulance any time.
Yeah, right? Exactly. So,
It's not to the same extent. It doesn't cover anything dental. It doesn't cover like the optometrist. It doesn't cover mental health issues. So it's very interesting that they call it universal healthcare, because last time I checked, my brain, eyes, and mouth are part of my body. But it is definitely a preferable system to the states where nothing is free.
Well, look, Before I get added by Australians, yes, look, the system isn't perfect. People are waiting on the public lists for things. So if you wanted to get your knee replaced, you're going to be waiting a very long time unless you pay the bucks. So it is still a have and a have not. And we have an extremely bad record on Indigenous health matters. What my point is if blood tests in America didn't cost an arm and a leg and a vein, would the appeal of the one drop of blood system be so great? Because I don't know that the drawing of a vial of blood is enough to have made this sensation. Mari, what do you think?
So coming from the States, our health system over here is a hot mess. It is the wild, wild west. Basically, you either get your health care through your employer, and normally you don't have many options going that route, or you go private by picking your own health care at an exorbitant amount of cost, depending on, you know, what your current health is, or you go Medicare, Medicaid, which is supposed to help, you know, people who are less fortunate when it comes to money, but, you know, oftentimes can still be abused. So we pay for ambulances, we pay for all of that. We pay for all of it. And it's all just a competition on how to get that patient to pay as much as possible, truly. And as somebody who's in the healthcare system and the healthcare field, I've seen it firsthand how it can affect patient, not only patient like results, but just their patient future. Like a lot of people, like when people talk about COVID, right? They talk about, you know, oh, there's a, you know, the chance that you survive is really high. That's fine. But what they don't talk about is the chance that, say, you do make it to the hospital, right? Not even, say it's just not even you get intubated or anything like that. Just say you're in the hospital for a few days due to COVID. They don't tell you how much those bills that you rack up if you're in that hospital can follow you and make you poor. There's a saying that, like, we're all one bad health diagnosis away from the poorhouse here in America, because it's true. If something were to happen to you and you don't have the savings, or if it's just so detrimental, like, you know, cancer treatment or anything that's chronic treatments, you can literally end up with nothing. So the system is broken, and, you know, the way to fix it, I don't know. And it allows investors and entrepreneurs like Elizabeth Holmes to take advantage of that. You know, for me today, I will probably be doing a lot of dancing around, because I work for a current company who is leading in healthcare diagnosis and rapid testing. Don't even know if I should have said that much. So you know, I'm going to come from it from a level of expertise while also trying to not lose my job.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the other thing, too, is I think that it's two separate issues, Sarah. On the one hand, the one drop of blood is like a very appealing marketing campaign. And for the yes. people such as like the cancer patients or people who are afraid of needles or anything like that, it's very appealing to think like I don't have to get a needle ever again, right? And then on the other hand, there's the complete capitalist argument of, well, this is a private enterprise and they're going to make all this money. And if Obama's like Medicare Act comes in, as yep. we mentioned on the show, more people will be able to get it. So now we'll make even more money like off of those poor people. So it's just like all mm-hmm. of that conflates to create a perfect storm for Elizabeth Holmes to just completely manipulate and you know, deceive people. And yeah. it's just wild. I'm so glad that all of this got exposed before COVID happened, because I
was thinking that same thing.
Know
can
what you imagine would have that? Done with the pandemic. I'm sure the company would have probably rose to like $90 billion mm-hmm. and like maybe there would have been less oversight because all the healthcare workers are so right. Like you have no idea yes. what would have happened. So I'm just so relieved that she was uh-huh. caught and stopped before that.
Yes. Yeah, because a couple of the sources for the Washington Post journalist who broke the story in 2015, John Carreyrou, some of them were healthcare professionals, doctors who had the time, I mean, as you say, to compare results. So mm-hmm. patients of theirs got the Walgreens Wellness Center results referred back to their doctor, which some people wouldn't have done. They would have simply gone on with that information and worked yep. as if that information was correct. But mm-hmm. some of them did come back to their healthcare professionals, their doctors, who can interpret the results and said, this is not right. In fact, there was one person whose potassium levels were so high, they would actually be dead. So that couldn't be right. So they ordered the standard tests and were able to make the comparison. So as you say, I mean, can you imagine during the pandemic how stretched our wonderful, wonderful healthcare workers were to the brink? And so the ability to have that moment to stop down and compare results perhaps would have been completely gone. I mean, having said all that, she started with a great idea, right? It's a fantastic idea.
It's impossible.
Like, she started with an idea that is appealing to people, that people want. And so, you mm-hmm. know what? Do the research, fine. Like, if that's what you can do, if you can get investors for your research, cool. However, startups fail all of the time. Ideas yes, that at first seem appealing end up not working out all of the time. But what doesn't happen all of the time is the complete fraud and deception that pushes something forward for profits above all else, especially in the healthcare field. I did also just want to correct Sarah. I believe John Carreyrou was at the Wall Street Journal just before.
Yes, what did I say? Like, I'm sorry. Thank you very much. Yes, Wall Street Journal. Yes, not Washington Post. Pardon
so,
me,
yes.
John.
So we're doing a great job. So the crime itself was Elizabeth Holmes basically promised that she could test a multitude of tests from a drop of blood using a small portable instrument. She then patent what from the beginning was what was supposed to be like microfluidic technology mm-hmm. in order to do this. And then she went finding investors, creating a board to the point where, what was it, $700 million was invested?
$700 million, yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. R&D research also from the Walgreens. She had she eventually got a contract with Walgreens in order to create wellness centers in their Walgreens where they could put the instrument and the instrument could give them the results. She did say that this was supposed to be, not only was it just from a single drop of blood, did they have a menu of 100 different analytes, if I remember correctly, mm-hmm. but it was also supposed to be cost efficient and speedy, from what I understand. She even said in some of the first few episodes that LabCorp and Quest Diagnostic Labs rule about, what she say, like 80 or 90% of the laboratory market, which is all, this is all very true. But the reason why they do that is because those are specialized labs that are now they're all over the country. And you send out results to those labs for small physicians' offices or clinics that can't do that laboratory work in their facility, be it because they don't have what's called a CLIA license or they don't have their own laboratory. They will follow that lab's collection process. Like if we're talking about a LabCorp will tell them, if you want to run a potassium, you have to collect this in this certain tube this way, and then you would ship it to them. And then they would then a few days later give you the results back. And they would normally give the patient results on a computer or whatever they're doing now. She said she wanted to disrupt this in industry. And I just thought it was really funny because she ended up basically becoming like a third. She did the exact same thing that LabCorp and Quest ends up doing. And we'll talk about that a little later. But yeah, the crime truly is, not only did she steal millions of dollars from her board of investors, from Walgreens, but she also let her erroneous results be sent out to patients, like Kirsten had said, to the point where, you know, patient lives were affected, you know? And that to me is a real crime. That's not the crime she's getting charged for. Of course not.
Yeah. You know? It's the money. What's wild to me is, like, when proving the wire fraud and conspiracy to commit wire fraud, which are the actual charges that she's charged and convicted of, within that is embedded just a complete lack of patient care and, you know, ethics violations. And so to me, it's actually, and it's not surprising because obviously money is what people care about, but, like, you'd think that there would be some sort of neglect or other charge that she could have received with regards to the people she put at risk. People got incorrect, right, like loss of pregnancy readings. People got incorrect cancer diagnosis. Like, it's truly so messed up, like every single side of it.
When I tell you, there are only a few fireable offenses, like, in the lab. Like, there are some things where it's like, you know, oh, we messed that up. Let's just admit to it and keep it moving and, you know, just, you know, redo the result and stuff like that. Pregnancy, loss of pregnancy, HCG level results. That is one of those things that if you mess that up, you can get fired. Like, I've seen it happen, like, recently. Like, that is one of those things telling a, like, because what it is when you're reporting that a pregnant person, say you're reporting that a pregnant person has a zero HCG, you're basically telling that person that they lost their pregnancy. And you have to check. That's why when HCG levels come across, like, a chemistry analyzer, normally, 9 times out of 10, you have to check those, even if they're within normal range, as we would say, because you have to double check and make sure that that is correct. If an HCG result comes that's really high, it'll actually reflex to do a repeat testing on most standard laboratories, because that is one of those results that doctors truly do base a lot of their diagnosis off of. So when I saw that at the end credits, I was like, oh, and then the HIV. Oh my God. And then when they talked about the TSH levels, I know this is kind of like a lot of science-y for some people, but that is, like, I'm trying to think if I could put it into sports terms, because you just cannot let stuff like that filter out.
It's the thing too, where just think about it. Like, I think any person, regardless of their scientific knowledge, can think, if you don't have cancer and a doctor tells you have cancer, think about that. Like, yes. Have people seen the movie The Last Holiday, where Queen Latifah thinks that she's dying, and then it turns out she was not dying because of a faulty medical test? Pretty sure that doctor got sued, you know? Yes. But there is, I believe, also, I don't even know what the status of this is. There was a class action lawsuit against Theranos, though, right, for the victims? I believe that is the case. I know, so hopefully people are getting their money.
Well, she's getting sued by the board. I'm sorry, go there.
Well, no, the board tried to do a class action lawsuit, which is complete bullshit and not within the realm of what a class action lawsuit is supposed to do. These freaking rich people. Sorry, Sarah.
You can say freaking. I'm not that delicate. I was just going to stop down on wire fraud, because it is very notable that she and Sunny Balwani were charged with several counts of wire fraud and conspiracy to commit wire fraud. I'm sure everybody listening to us knows what that is, but just to remind you, it's when it's punishable by prison or crime, which is great. It's when you commit a fraud. By using a form of telecommunication or the internet. So that's where the wire part comes in. The fraud is fraud, and the wire part is, could be telephone, telex, fax, Mr. Telex, ask your grandparents.
Telex.
any electronic form. So in case anyone was thinking, well, what's the difference? If you con someone to their, if you defraud someone to their face, that's fraud. If you do it over any electronic means, it's wire fraud. It's all the same. It's being completely heartless and deliberately defrauding people. And the interesting thing that Elizabeth Holmes rested some of her defense on was, I'm the CEO. I didn't read every email.
Right. The whole, I don't know. I'm not sure. Like that was
out of here.
I think we've kind of covered the crime pretty much, and we'll go in more in depth. Let's talk about the show itself. So
yes.
So if you want to hear an episode by episode breakdown, you can go over to the post show recaps. They're doing a great job of covering the Dropout. They did it episodically, but what we're going to do is I really kind of want to break down the characters and the acting in this and how we think it's stacked up to other like docudramas. We have to start with Amanda Seyfried as Elizabeth Holmes. Kirsten, start us off. What did you think about Amanda's performance?
She is incredible. The way that she played Elizabeth Holmes, I thought was so beautiful. I feel like, while obviously we went over the case and, you know, there's arguments to be made about, you know, how accurately the Dropout covers the full, you know, chain of events. But the way they present Elizabeth is kind of like, you know, she started off, she always was really ambitious, wanted to be a billionaire. She had an idea, it got out of control, and then she kind of is corrupted by, you know, the power and money, and then that makes things worse. To me, that's how she's presented on the show. Mm-hmm. I don't know to what extent that's really accurate to, you know, Elizabeth Holmes. But I just think that she brought such beautiful nuance. I loved how they would show her practicing in the mirror things that she would say, how she would be repeating things over and over again. Obviously not a medical doctor, cannot diagnose anybody with anything, but I feel like when you see her doing that, it just kind of goes to show how like divorced from normal people she is. Like, and I don't know what the cause of that is, and I wouldn't even pretend to guess. And I really like that. Like, I feel like they really just captured the like strange nature of Elizabeth Holmes. Because if you watch any footage of like the real Elizabeth Holmes, you're like, oh my God, like what is this? How does she fool people? And I feel like Amanda Seyfried did it so well.
Right. And I really want to know, like, was it just being in her presence that got all these people, you know what I'm saying? Because we talk about this with all of these fraudsters, right? Like, it's always something about them that makes people want to give them money. And, you know, and I just wonder, because everything I've seen about her, she's just been weird to me. But that's because I'm as somebody who knew that she was a fraud. And immediately when I heard the idea, I never gave her like that benefit of doubt. But I would really love to like know, is it the mystery of it? Is it just that people don't understand the technology? So they're like, if this is true, if what she's promising is true, this is a miracle?
Yeah, I mean, I think the medical technology thing is so huge. Everyone's looking for the thing that will work. They want to invest in the thing that will work. Mm-hmm. But also I think what Amanda Seyfried gives us, I mean, wonderful performance. Her physicality is incredible. The way she runs, the way she dances, the way she G's herself up. Even when we see her later surrounded by her bodyguards, the forward carriage of the head is extraordinary. I think what they give us, what they hint at, what they are subtle about is you have to be in her presence to get it. I mean, everyone talks about how magnetic she is. It must be said there is a gender thing going on, because it seems that older men are more likely, mind you, older men are the ones with the money. So like, who can say?
But it's also in like Silicon Valley, where there are lots of young people with money too.
Yeah, that's true. So I think it's a combination of the idea is very succulent. The idea is very attractive. People are tuned to believe these geniuses behave slightly oddly. So perhaps her odd behavior was almost like a badge. Ah, yes, she belongs with these odd geniuses. And certainly after she started wearing the odd genius uniform, which is the black turtleneck, you know, wear the same thing every day means your beautiful big brain can work really hard on all these other things instead of what you're wearing. So I think there was a combination, and also there's something very intoxicating about young people with a passion. When they speak passionately about their passions, there's something very endearing and exciting about it. So I think she had that combo. And also, let's not forget, she came from a very privileged background. Her father worked for, she had a long history of wealth in her family, I believe.
Right.
Her father worked for Enron. Was obviously involved in that collapse, or was affected by that collapse when she was a teenager. And I think that that can affect someone. Certainly the way the show presents her, she wanted to be a millionaire and to have a big idea. Those were the things driving her, rather than coming the other way around with, oh, what if this interesting thing could happen, and then building on that. So I think they show that very well as well. And, I mean, it has to be said, that performance is absolutely incredible.
Amazing. Like, the voice. And it was weird because it's like I was thinking, I know I'm looking at Amanda Seyfried, but I feel like I am like immersed in this. Like, she did such a great job that I did lose her in that performance, which is really hard to do when you have a well-known actress trying to portray a character of a person.
And so a well-known person too, right? Like, she was a well-known actress playing a well-known character.
Yes, exactly. That's why normally with like biopics, I love when like they just get an unknown actor to play it, because I think it's so much easier for me to believe it, like they've turned into that person, when it's somebody I don't know. But I thought she did an amazing job. And Elizabeth as a character, so can we talk about like the first few episodes, like the first like three to four episodes, right? We get, you know, we get her seeing her father, the fall of Enron. We get her just overly idolizing Steve Jobs.
The poster in her room, I just cannot imagine any teenage girl at any point in their lives being like, you know who I want a poster of? No, it's not NSYNC. It's not the Backstreet Boys. It's not New Kids on the Block. No, it's Steve Jobs. I want a Steve Jobs poster by my bed. Creep shit.
Makes no sense. Like, truly, truly makes no sense. And I think she did a good job of like convincing everybody around her that she wanted to change the world. But I'm not so sure she wanted to. I think she just wanted the fame, the status, well, of course, we said she she wanted to be a billionaire. She said she wants to change the world. But did you? Because we see that when it starts to crumble, you don't care about the patients that you can be affecting or putting out erroneous results. You kind of just care about being the face of a multi-billion dollar company. So I thought, and this was one of the, I was like, I am Phyllis Gardner. Phyllis Gardner is me. Yeah. When she went
love
to Phyllis. When she went to Phyllis Gardner that first time, when she was still in school, talking about that patch, and Phyllis laughed in front of her face, I was like, thank you. That would have been me. So one of Elizabeth's, correct me if I get this wrong, guys. But one of Elizabeth Holmes's first thoughts or patents was to have a patch on somebody's like arm or something that could monitor.
Yeah. I don't know if she actually patented that, but in the show it's presented as that was the first idea that she brought forward. Yes. And weirdly enough, her first professor, who is literally a scientist, is like, oh yeah, you should go talk to, like, what? And it was, so it was a patch that was supposed to diagnose what's wrong with you and administer meds and monitor if the meds are working in a patch.
In a patch.
Phyllis Gardner, who is all of us, and she's an absolute trick when you see her in the real Phyllis Gardner, but beautifully played here, is skeptical. Perhaps as a teacher, she could have been more encouraging, but you would think the intellectual rigor of Stanford would require the professors to say, that's not going to work, go away and make something else. Well, Elizabeth Holmes, also- not prepared to wait. 19, yeah. Not prepared to wait.
She's also not Elizabeth Holmes' professor. Right? Mm, like, right. This meeting was a favor to a friend who was mm-hmm. Elizabeth's professor. Yeah. And it just, like, maybe it could have been more delicate, whatever. No. But, like, no. You can't just let, like, because there are things that will work and there are things that will not work. And she makes a very good point that science is in the trying things until you find the one that will work. Mm-hmm. And Elizabeth is just not willing to face failure whatsoever.
Yes. Exactly. So, I agreed. Like when Phyllis Gardner said, you know, this patch would have to like carry reagents in it against body heat and body temperature, I laughed so hard as a laboratorian, because keeping reagents at the proper temperature is like the hardest thing you can do when it comes to it's not hard to do it, but it is the one thing you have to make sure is done. Because if your reagents are not properly stored or up to temp, then it doesn't matter anything else. That test is going to be wrong. And so I just found Phyllis very funny. And I thought we had seen the last of her, because I think what it was is Elizabeth's original professor, he was a chemical engineering professor. And again, they were working on microfluidics, but they weren't working on diagnostic. I think he didn't know about like how to approach diagnostically. So that's mm-hmm. why he told her to go to Phyllis. And mm-hmm. Phyllis told her to like, you know, keep going, you know.
Well, he ended up working for her at Theranos.
Right.
Giving up tenure at Stanford to go to a startup. It's extraordinary.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Mari, can I ask you a science question while we're on the topic of the patch and everything? So I was talking about all this with my boyfriend, and we were really trying to break down how everything was. And I was like, to me, the temperature situation for like medications, reagents, vaccines, etc., that is like the major issue right now in the world of like, can we keep vaccines at the right temperature to go to, you know, places that might not have refrigeration, right? So to me, the money idea is finding out a way to stabilize things at higher temperatures rather than going in for the diagnostics and testing. And so I was like, wouldn't that be like the actual smart idea? I know it's probably not possible the way that she would do it anyways, but I was just like, does that make more sense? I guess people don't think about money and like providing things to the global south.
Well, it's all chemistry, because no matter what, molecules and certain things are stable at certain temperatures. So no matter how you put it and how much you want to try and manipulate it, it just comes down to pure chemistry. Some analytes, some reagents, some solutions just cannot be stable at certain temperatures. Like it's just impossible. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know what that would be something that we could try and target to see if like, hey, can we like maybe see if this can be stored at shelf life. Can this be stored refrigerated? Like, but that is one of the main things that when you go through FDA approval and you go through when you do peer reviews, that's one of the first things that they always test is like, where is this stable? And it's always a range too. So don't forget that. It's always like, it's stable at room temperature, which is 25 degrees to 37 degrees Celsius. So there are ranges, but honestly, some things just cannot go past a certain temperature without becoming unstable.
The interesting thing about the FDA approval that I was doing a bit of side googling on is manufacturers of biomedical equipment need FDA approval for the equipment if they are supplying them to a third party. But if you are using it yourself, you don't need FDA approval. So the Edison machines, the machines themselves, as used by Theranos, never needed FDA approval because they weren't being supplied to a third party. This blew my little tiny performing arts mind.
Sarah, don't get me started on the FDA because there is so much on. If you look, I would really recommend if people are curious about this to listen to the podcast Maintenance Phase, which talks a lot about like anti-fat bias in basically society, but they take it from a super academic standpoint, and they have an episode on how several like very dangerous diet pills got FDA approval and how that works. Or also season two of the podcast, The Dream, where they talk about like wellness culture also really gets into that. But it's like there is so much shit that people are swearing by, that people are selling to you because you're the product that they want you, that is so dangerous, that is just on the shelves. And it quote, doesn't need FDA approval. It's bullshit.
Exactly. No, like no vitamins really need FDA approval. It is a mind fuck how like the FDA works, because there are things that are designated that need FDA approval and things that aren't. Most COVID testing technology right now is working under emergency use authorization for FDA, which means they're not FDA approved. It just means that under emergency situation, this is an emergent situation, FDA has looked at it enough, basically, in order for you to be able to do this testing, but they can caveat it as an EUA, you know. And you know, I'm gonna not go into the FDA too much, but it truly is, if it's one of those things, like if you can find the money to find the loopholes, you can find the loopholes. And there's a good documentary, Food Inc., that talks about the FDA and the USDA and how our preparation with food, how they're the one thing they're supposed to do is monitor how food preparation happens. And sometimes they don't do that. So it is amazing how you can get away with things if you can get around governing bodies. And this is exactly what Theranos did. Like you said, Sarah, they kept their Edisons on their site and their labs, and they claimed that, you know, they'll send the blood to there. They would use the Edisons. They wanted to put them in Walgreens and stuff like that. But you have to do peer-reviewed journals. You have to be FDA approved. Even if you don't do FDA approval, peer-reviewed like studies is the way to go, so that other studies that are not under your umbrella can test your technology and be like, okay, yeah, what they're saying, what they're presenting is correct. And I, as an independent researcher, have double checked the numbers that they have given me. I have done my own research and I agree with this. By locking that down and saying, we will not be doing peer-reviewed research because it's proprietary, it's patented, you know, we don't want them to steal our technology. I can't believe they got away with that for so long, because it's like, this is science. You know, this is one, you have the patent, you're supposed to be able to keep that patent. They shouldn't be able to like steal your idea or whatever. This is science. Like, you can't just say, oh, they were presenting that they were 95% sensitive for what was it, syphilis, I think, in some of one of the later episodes they brought up to her, but they were deleting all of the outliers. So Oh God, I'm talking so much science right now.
Well, no, and that's the thing too, though, is like, this is super interesting, and I think most people will value like the getting into the science of it is like a new true crime perspective. I feel like on the story that we've all heard a million times.
Thank you. So
What alerted the incredible Erica Chung, who was the whistleblower in the lab. If you don't know the story, I'm sure everyone knows the story, but this is one of the things that she brought up to the lab director. And I think this was a beautiful performance by the actress portraying Erica. And can I just stop down and say, yay, whistleblowers all over the world, blow that whistle. And I'm glad that there are laws in the United States to protect whistleblowers, which was the route she went when she reported to a federal agency. Yeah. But I think that the show does a really good job of not overloading us with the science, but certainly stepping us through the science. So through Erica going to the docudrama, going to the lab director and questioning, taking out the outliers, and that small conversation where he's saying, yes, that's what we're going to do, and her being confused, we, the lay viewer, the non-science educated viewer, we've got it. We can see what they're doing. You know, having never heard outliers, having never heard any of that, that small scene sort of gave me the science that I needed to tell me how they were getting their results that were very glowing, and how Erica started to become incredibly distressed about the situation.
Yeah, and Erica is a real one, because the second she saw something was wrong, she said something, she stepped up. And like, I think that this case also gives so much press to Tyler Schultz, who is like the public, like, quote, first whistleblower. Mm-hmm. But I think the show did a very good job of showing why Tyler Schultz was empowered to do that, because he has money, he has influence, his family can pay hundreds of thousands of dollars in legal fees, so he can publicly step up and say this. Whereas someone like Erica, who, as you know, said, in comes from more humble beginnings and doesn't have, you know, the, like, she literally is like, I can't lose my job, and is almost going to continue onward, even though she knows it's a problem. Whereas Tyler, like, yeah, he can get fired. He'll be fine. His life will be fine. He is a rich white man. He will be fine. But I don't think he would have said anything if Erica hadn't, like, convinced him to.
Oh, I completely agree with that. I completely agree with that. And I loved everything about Erica's character. And we're here, so we might as well just jump here. Erica, they moved Erica to the Normandy lab, right? And in the Normandy lab, this is the later episodes. We're not at the later episodes. We'll go back.
Listen, it's eight episodes. We're going to just bounce around.
We're just going to – spoilers abound.
You've all seen it.
Yeah. So Erica is working late night in the lab on Thanksgiving because she's the newbie, which happens a lot. And she's trying to give this patient a result. You know, she's using the Theranos cartridge to give a result, but the QC is failing. And whenever a QC fails, you are not allowed to release any of those results until you get QC to pass. Like, QC
is that quality control?
Quality control, yes.
Okay, yeah.
And different instruments have different QC requirements. Some instruments have daily QC where you have to do quality control every day. Some have it every 8 hours. Some have it once every shipment. Like, that's how it depends on the assay and the test and all that. But the moral of the story is she was trying to bring the QC in and it wasn't working. She calls somebody, some shadowy figure from R&D comes.
Yeah. Oh my God. Just, that was scary. Like, that woman was a ghoul.
Yes.
Like, she like hovered and like she was floating off the ground in like a black gown, like a dementor, just to like type in the password to give the results anyways. And like, thankfully we get Erica, who at every point, she is used to be, as we said, like our mirror into the science. And she like explains why that is so bad, but is, you know, pushed down again. Like, also, we're diluting blood samples to run them through existing technology.
What?
And like, let me tell you again, I'm not a scientist, but it just didn't, it did not sit right with
me. Don't make sense. I was sitting there like, how do you dilute? What are y'all testing for? I think she said vitamin D. I was like, I guess, because there is nothing that you can do with that blood sample once you dilute it for any type of like hematology based testing. So I was floored when I saw that.
And isn't there an issue too when you do a blood prick that a prick on the finger, that unlike putting a needle into a vein, sorry everybody, that there are other items that come with that blood, like skin cells, and I mean you're not getting venous blood.
Sarah, there are so many reasons why you cannot take a capillary drop of blood from a finger and try and run analytes on it that can only properly be resulted or analyzed from venous blood. Like there truly is.
That's the thing too, is it's just like all of these issues just compound to show like how evil all of this is.
Yes.
But like, even if you want to say that Elizabeth Holmes started with the best of intentions, which I think is, you know, spurious at best, it certainly did not end up that way.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Can we talk about my darling Naveen Andrews, who I was just so happy to see? I didn't mind his little fat belly playing Sonny Balwani.
We have to talk about Sonny. I mean, I want to get your guys' opinion about Sonny. He basically meets Elizabeth when she is on a in like episode one or two,
like a retreat.
Yes. They're in a Mandarin program, an immersive Mandarin program where Stanford, I think it was Stanford sent them to China like for the summer, and they immersed them into a Mandarin program so that she could learn Mandarin, so that everybody could learn Mandarin.
Pre-Stanford. It's the summer before she went. Yeah.
Okay.
I think.
Yep. Okay, sorry.
It was the summer before. Because okay. Remember, she's heating up the ramen and she's trying to talk to the hot guy and be like, did you know I'm going to Stanford? And he's like, I don't know what you're saying. I'm bad at this.
Yes, exactly. And she wasn't really connecting with any of her peers. And there was Sonny. I don't know. Did anybody catch his age at this point?
I believe that he was 14 years older than her. So she was 17. He was 31.
Gotcha.
Let me confirm that while you guys go into this.
Yeah, so that point, he'd already made and sold very profitably a software company.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he was 19 years older.
Woo.
So he's 36. Yeah. Yes. Or no, 37, because she was 18.
Mm-hmm. yeah, exactly, Sarah. He had already sold and was profitable for a healthcare company.
For a software company. He did not have a healthcare background.
Was it a software company?
Software
company. My bad. It's been a minute since I saw those first episodes. Yeah.
I just know people will come for you. I feel like people don't get upset about like the smallest details.
The small things.
I'm just like, let me get then, it. Like, leave them alone.
Thank you. Otherwise, we have to have a whole section at the beginning of the next episode apologizing for everything we got wrong.
No, that next episode, you have a recording from me being like, you leave them alone or else.
Exactly. So they strike up an unlikely friendship. It turned sexual. They didn't have sex in China.
Turned sexual later. Well, as far as we know, you know, they're still quite, the reals guarded about this relationship. She, just to jump out into her trial, which finished in January with conviction on some of the charges and not others. She claims that he was emotionally and physically abusive. We believe women. Mm-hmm. They were originally to be tried together. They severed the trials because basically she was going to lay a lot of blame onto him.
Right.
And poor Sonny's going second, right? So he's currently in court now. And they are holding her sentencing, thank you, until mm-hmm. September. And the thought is that she might help them with their prosecution of Sonny. So it's all quite sticky. But as far as the dropout, the docudrama tells us, the relationship was not sexual for quite some time, and certainly well into the beginnings of Theranos.
Yeah, until he came back to basically save her, because she was about to be ousted as CEO, but she brought him on as an investor, which saved her spot. This is where I want to ask you guys, how did you feel about Sonny's portrayal in the show? Let me start with Kirsten.
Yeah, so it's really hard to, because there's not like that much known about their private lives, right? And so obviously, right. like when we hear about someone being abusive, mm-hmm. again, like we want to believe women, but also Elizabeth right. Holmes is not a reliable narrator, right? So it's like, was yes. she honest that one time? Maybe. Mm-hmm. Like I would believe it absolutely, but I also could see her like using it, and they use even in that sorry, not to go back to Elizabeth too much, but like they go use in that moment mm-hmm. where she like copies the Apple Store employee to like have emotion to like be seen as like
yes.
that. So I could see it falling into that. But I think they do such an incredible job painting a very complex narrative about Sonny, where at first you're like, yeah, it's weird that this older guy is hanging out with this younger girl, but also, you know what, they're the only two people in the program taking it seriously. They both really want to be able to speak Mandarin fluently. They get along really well. When Elizabeth doesn't want to dance, he says no problem, and we don't see the relationship turn sexual. And then mm-hmm. over time, he kind of, based on when he comes back into her life, becomes kind of a protective role, which makes a very mm-hmm. weird power dynamic. And then we see how that dynamic shifts their relationship and how the camaraderie between them turned into like a very negative energy, where like passion turning to anger kind of situation. And I think right. they painted a very nuanced portrayal of what might have happened, because we don't know
right.
that it was like that. Like, do we have an account of him dumping green juice on her?
Well, we have the great Lindsay Wilson pointed out that while this show was being made, their text messages in real world were being brought into evidence in her trial. And so Lindsay does point out that towards the later episodes of The Dropout, we hear her calling him Tiger and him mm-hmm. calling her baby. And that came up from the text messages. So they were quickly putting those in. And thanks, Lindsay, for that insight.
Yeah,
I thought that was fascinating.
Is an icon, legend, and genius. Amazing. She's also working on her PhD in epidemiology. So a great Ooh. Resource in this case as well. The other thing too, I don't know. Their texts are so weird. I just saw that some of their texts had come up in Sonny's trial within the last couple of weeks. And it's literally him being like, I am in control of Theranos. And it's like, did Elizabeth take his phone, like send a text like to herself? Like, because I could see her doing that.
Yeah. And they show him throughout especially the final episodes, being very aggressive with hate to use the word, but they were using he was very aggressive with like the sources when they thought that they could root out who the sources were. We saw him flying to Arizona and basically threatening the doctors not to go forward with the article. He was yelling at Mark from a balcony. We will sue you.
Delete the emails. They use him as like the enforcer of Theranos.
And that's why I was kind of like, I don't know how I feel about this portrayal, because they truly are. It felt like they were shifting it, like just like Elizabeth was going to do in her trial or did in her trial, shifting the blame onto him when, you know, I don't think he did anything that she wouldn't have wanted him to do. Just how we got the part where they're like, oh, we have a Siemens machine here. Great instruments to work with, by the way. And they're like, well, open it up and we'll figure out, you know, we'll figure out what's inside. And they're like, yeah. you ethically can't do that. And then they come back at night and she's telling him to do it. He's like, I already did it. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I really, truly feel they went hand in hand, but...
Well, it's just like how we see when she's drunk and tells him that they lied and used a fake reading in the test in Sweden. And he goes, don't tell anyone else that you've told me. Like, he's on board from day one with the fraud of it all. Yes. But so was she.
Exactly. Exactly.
And with these two performers, and this is such an extraordinary piece of writing. I mean, the problem with biopics is that we don't live our lives in a narratively satisfying way. So to craft the biopic is can be a real, you know, work of art to give it that narrative flow. But the apotheosis, if I may, of these two performers with the writers is the scene where they turn on each other. So quietly, so subtly, with such that she just looks at him and says, what did you do?
Mm-hmm.
Did you do something I don't know anything about? And you go, she's already planning her defense. And the scene when he's stroking her hair and then he asks her where she's going to live.
Yeah.
And they're both basically going to their corners and so much more effective than shouting or throwing things or being violent. This incredible, these two minds just turning to their own protection, like animals, basically, I thought was an incredible performance by Amanda and Naveen, if I may call them by their first names.
Yes. And I actually, I can't even believe this. I didn't even recognize Naveen. Like, he didn't even look like the man I've seen before, right? So I feel like they did a very good job. And then when you look up pictures of the real Sunny Balwani, Ramesh Balwani, they don't look alike. But he got the expression in the face dead on, like that like in like kind of enforcer, neutral to angry face. Like they really nailed the expression that you see in pretty much every picture of Ramesh Balwani online, which I was really impressed with.
Yeah, I see it.
They basically made every character hotter, which is what biopics do.
Well, it's true.
They truly did. Yes. And exactly. And I love you. I heard your reference, Kirsten, of Elizabeth throwing stuff in a bag.
Okay. I watched it and then I just rewatched it this weekend. Okay.
Yes. So I think, is there anything else we want to talk about from any of the episodes, any moments that stand out to you guys? While we wrap up and do our recommendations and all of that, before we do that, any just fantastical moments? Like, I didn't know anything about Elizabeth Holmes' early life, so I did like knowing more about her. But I did feel like they were very sympathetic in the beginning, and maybe that's because they wanted you to turn on her in the end.
Yeah, I was very worried when I watched episode one. I thought, oh no, is this the Elizabeth Holmes apology tour?
Right.
But I think that it was a very clever way to draw you in and then turn you slowly against her as step by step she reveals herself. Either she changes. I don't think people change. I think they're like that from the start and they get opportunities to break bad. So as she breaks bad, my only thing about it overall is I wonder if it's a very slightly too long, but I had a very positive response to this docudrama. How about you, Kirsten?
Yeah, I absolutely loved it. I think one thing that I could not ignore William H. Macy as Richard Hughes. His performance was so incredible. I love just like the concept of just like an angry old man who's like pissed off that he was disrespected by a young girl. And then that triggers like one of the biggest like whistleblower like campaign like ever. Like it's wild.
Like you technically should not be on his side because he tried to like maneuver her.
To scam her because he's mad. Oh.
Yeah, it was really funny. But yes, exactly. Thank you so much, Kirsten. William H. Macy, amazing. Any other shout outs before
Stephen
I start?
Fry.
Stephen Fry. Yeah, Stephen Fry, Ian Gibbons. And Ian Gibbons' story is super tragic and horrible. And when
I didn't
you read
know it.
when you read what actually happens, it was actually he completed suicide the night before he was going to have to testify. So the show makes it look like they had given him a way out of testifying and he, you know, made a different decision. But in real, he was going to testify the next day and he just couldn't do it. And it's so sad.
I've watched The Inventor. I've watched like at least two documentaries on it and read. I don't think it was the Wall Street Journal, but I read an article on it when it like back in the day when it first broke. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember anybody referring to Ian Gibbons. Maybe I missed it, but that part really did shock me. I was like, oh my gosh.
I hadn't heard about that at all.
He's out of the picture. He dies by suicide earlier in the story, as it were. So wonderful that The Dropout really puts a light onto him. And we hear from his widow in The Inventor as well. But I think when the newspaper articles are coming out, there is unfortunately a larger story, so it's great that Ian and his widow are given you know the time that they are in both The Dropout and The Inventor.
Yes, yeah. I would say one of the things that this biopic or docudrama, whatever you want to call it, does really well that some of them didn't. The acting was really good in this. Like it was really good, and I think it was shot in a way that didn't feel. Like there was fantastical stuff happening, but it did not feel overly exaggerated. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Like I was mm-hmm. like, yep, this yeah. all makes sense. This sounds like a slippery slope into hell. You know, like I hate to bring it up, but like Inventing Anna, like I could not get through Inventing Anna personally just because like it all felt fake. To me, Inventing Anna, which I don't know if that was what they were going for, but I think it was the selection
of the narrator. I didn't care about that journalist, and as soon as you don't care about her, you're dead with Inventing Anna. I mean, I watched the whole thing very mm-hmm. grimly. I think it was a very poor choice because the journalist, as portrayed in Inventing Anna, is deeply unprofessional, I didn't care about her, and not caring about her meant that I had to watch her for, you know, 50% of the time.
Right.
But yes, these are the scam years, right? Mm-hmm. With these people taking people for a ride. Be careful out there, everybody. Use yes. your brain. Use yeah. your senses.
And if someone is telling you that someone put $30,000 into their bank account because they invested in crypto and you just have to trust their friend and click the link, that is a scam. Do not click the link. Expect that you're going to get $30,000. Just live your life like you are so poor that you have to be skeptical of it. Because I don't have any money to lose. I am that poor. But if you're not that poor, live like you are.
Yes.
And if you have money to like spare, you can send it to me. I will take care of it.
Yeah. So before we get to our magnifying glasses and recommendations, I just want to give you the update on the verdict. We've referred to it. I would recommend that you listen to the January 5th episode of the Dropout podcast. It's entitled Verdict, and it'll give you a really detailed account about and very straightforward. It's about 50 minutes. It's a really good listen. They talk to a couple of the jurors and they examine the verdict in detail and they make their predictions for the Sani Balwani trial. So that's a really good place to go.
Yes, exactly. Let's move on to some recommendations. Of course, like I've already said it, The Inventor, Out for Blood in Silicon Valley. I did watch that one when it came out because I was like, yes. Sarah, you had The Talking Heads that was on that here?
Yeah, I mean, I would recommend, look, it depends on whether you like, some people like documentaries, some people like docudramas. I like both. Mm-hmm. If you're going to watch both, I would watch The Inventor first, the documentary, mm-hmm. and then The Dropout, because I think they illuminate each other. But you can, if you're interested because of The Dropout, go and watch The Inventor. It's directed by Alex Gibney, and the talking heads are very interesting. The New Yorker journalist, Ken Auletta, who, if you're a New Yorker reader, he does the just does profiles, and he did a very positive profile of our friend Elizabeth, as did Fortune journalist Roger Parloff, and they are both present and very, very interesting, and they have a lot of really good insight. Obviously, they have Wall Street Journal journalist John Carreyrou and his book Bad Blood. And the other person that's absolutely fascinating they have is a man called Dan Ariely. Excuse me if I mispronounce that. He's a behavioral economist. So he's not connected to the case, but what he talks about is how people behave around money, as the name suggests. And he has a fascinating example of a dice game where you throw dice to receive a certain amount of money. You can say if you mentally thought, oh, I'll take the top or the bottom number, and how if you're hooked up to a lie detector, if the money is for yourself, the lie detector detects the lie. If the money is for a charity, the lie detector does not detect the lie. So one of the things that he talks about is that idea or that sheen of the greater good can make people, do bad things, using the devil's money to do God's work. So it's really worth a look. And you'll also hear from some of the real people involved, including the young man whose name escapes me, Tyler, and Erica. So I couldn't recommend that highly enough.
Kirsten, do you have any recommendations? They don't have to be about this case in particular, but maybe something like...
I've got some recommendations. Don't worry. Sorry, give me the warning.
Okay,
if people are into docudramas and you want more of that, I would highly recommend watching Dirty John. Seasons 1 and Season 2 is also really good. Season 2, they cover the Betty Broderick story, which is deeply fascinating, and it's acted really, really well.
Yes.
So would highly recommend that. What we recorded today is a podcast about a docuseries that is based on a podcast. So if you like true crime podcasts, I always recommend Unraveled. They've had like 4 or 5 seasons, and it is so good. Every season's been different. I think, Mari, you would love Season 2. They talk about expert testimonies and how a lot of forensic science is not super rigorous. I think you would love that. And their current season is on one-and-done killers who do, like, one incredibly heinous crime and then just never do it again. And they are a lot of them getting caught right now with genetic genealogy. As well as, if you want more scam, this is also a podcast, Twin Flames. Stephanie Beatriz from Encanto and Brooklyn Nine-Nine is the host of Twin Flames on Wondery. And they cover this total like cult of the like twin flame relationship situation. And it is very dark and very good. It's only 6 episodes. I listened to it in like a day.
I love Stephanie Beatriz.
She's so good.
Oh,
and Twin Flames was incredible. Like, it is absolutely stunning, the way she tells the story. Yeah.
We'll put all these in the show notes, of course.
I'm like subscribing to some right now.
Literally subscribe to the pods. Oh, and if you want a documentary, it's a couple weeks late. It's gotten a lot of buzz, but The Puppet Master on Netflix blew my mind.
Mm-hmm. People have suggested The Puppet Master to us. I have not gotten a chance to watch it yet.
Once you start watching it, you'll be into it. It is about like a scammer, fraudster guy, and it like goes into like his start in university in Ireland and how he like pretended that he was like a spy for the Secret Service and that another student was like a terrorist, and how he like took these people and like got all their money, and then it's like some people have gotten out, but then there's like one woman who is still with him and totally brain, like, he is a wild scam. It is insane. It's only 3 episodes and it will fly by. Like,
maybe we'll get you to come back and talk about that with us.
So good. But yeah, sorry again. True crime is my passion.
Yes. Us too.
Yes, exactly. Okay, so of course, at Crime Scene, we are eager to hear your feedback and suggestions for future episodes. You can follow us, follow Crime Scene on Twitter at Crime Scene, RHAP. That's CRIMESEENRHAP. Or you can email us, send an email to crimescenerhap@gmail.com. Kirsten, tell the people where they can find you.
Yeah. So if you liked hearing from me, I talk about all kinds of nonsense that's not so serious as crime. I have a weekly BoJack Horseman podcast with the aforementioned Lindsay Wilson, BoJack Horse Pod. I talk about Riverdale on Kowski Cast, and I talk about Temptation Island right now on the Hot Dummies on Islands wrap up feed, which may or may not interest you. But if you like true crime, you might like pop culture celebrity gossip, because I do think at our core, we are all gossips and we love drama that we are not involved in. And a very new wrap up is starting. The first episode is dropping the week of recording, April 18th, 2022. Not sure when this podcast is dropping, but whatever. It's coming out now. myself and Sasha Joseph are the two co-hosts of Mess Magnets, a pop culture podcast where we will be breaking down, you know, trending topics, celeb gossip, pop culture, all of that kind of stuff. And we're going to do it from a perspective of, if you've just like seen the trending topic and you don't know what it's about, we'll be right there to make sense of it for you. And we will also be sharing listener mess as well. Listeners can anonymously submit their gossip and mess for us to talk about. And we're so excited for it. And, you know, it's a new podcast. We're only approved for like 6-episode run. So we would love if people could come show some support.
Absolutely. Yes. Awesome. And before you go, do you have an Elizabeth Holmes for us? One line?
There's just the one line. Okay, I can only do one line, and it's very much Amanda Seyfried doing Elizabeth Holmes, but she's like, "This is an inspiring step forward."
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. That's how I feel about Mess Magnets. It's an inspiring step forward.
Sarah, where can the people find you?
They can find me on Twitter at Sarah Carradine. I'm finishing up Bridgerton season 2 with The Dark Walk, which includes Kirsten and also Sasha Joseph and Geneva Guadalupe. That's over on Post Show Recaps. We're about to do the last two, and then who knows what happens next. I guess it's season 3. Also over there, you can hear me talk about Our Flag Means Death, hashtag renew Our Flag Means Death. We're all pushing for a second season. It's the gay pirate show, gay. If you haven't got into it, what are you doing? Get into it. What about you, Mari? Where can people find you?
Okay, as of right now, the Wrestling Wrap Up is on a hiatus. So other than here on Crime Scene, you can find me on the Atlanta Recap podcast over on Post Show Recaps, where me, Chappelle, and Latanya Starks do a episodic review of season 3 of Atlanta. So me and Chappelle just dropped the last episode on this past Sunday. If you're watching the show, please go listen to our podcast, because we're trying to make heads and tails of this new season just like you are. So come speculate with us and go check us out on Post Show Recaps. Other than that, next time on Crime Scene,
we're covering Bad Sport, which is a fantastic series on Netflix. And the episode we're looking at is called Gold War, fascinating ice skating scandal. So again, I'm sorry nobody dies. We gave you a dead body.
Oh my God.
We gave you a dead body last week, you murder ghouls. We're giving you ice skating, very attractive sequins, and the whiff of cheating. We're doing that in collaboration with the great Grace Leader and her Off-Speed podcast. So that will be our next episode. Before we go, of course, we should give our magnifying glasses out of 5, whether we recommend Dropout. I have had messages from people saying, "Oh, I really like your format." And I thought, "Oh, we can't disappoint them. We don't give our magnifying glasses out of 5. Kirsten, what would you say?
Yeah. So, you know, I'm coming in as like the substitute teacher. So I feel like I can be nice more so than anyone else. I honestly give it 4.5 magnifying glasses. I think this is a really well done docuseries. I feel like they give you the full wealth of the experience and, you know, how something like Theranos happens. I loved it. I would absolutely recommend it. And I think everyone should watch it.
And what about you, Mari?
Same. I would give it, I'm trying to decide if I want to give it exactly what Kirsten did or go up to a 5. I think I'm going to go 4.5 because there's nothing. I want that 5 to be a very high standard, because I agree. I liked everything about it. I normally am not the biggest fan of docudramas, docuseries, whatever, because sometimes I feel like they're overdone. So this one actually really hit the mark on a lot of things for me. So yeah, I'll go with 4.5 as well. How about you, Sarah?
Well, I'm going to give it 4. I thought it was extremely good. For me, it was a little long. I had a few too many scenes of her geeing herself up. I think the use of music was incredible. There was just a little bit too much. I thought, oh, yeah, I get it. You can move on now.
No, I could have watched it forever. I could have had two more episodes.
There we go. That's why we have the different minds on it. So I'm going to give it 4, but just a little side magnifying glass. I'm going to give 5 to the documentary, The Inventors, because to me, it was that good. Uh-huh. So join us next week. And until we do that, we'd like to thank Will from America for the amazing theme music and Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. Until next time, case closed.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round 2. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.